Monday, May 27th, and this is Season 3, Episode 37 of the 4-Star Spurs Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony. With me this week, we have Rick.
Hello.
We have Lucas.
Hello, hello.
We have Joe.
Hi there.
And returning to the podcast after a couple months hiatus is Kevin.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
Yeah, where the hell have you been?
Watching a baby. Yeah, Mondays haven't been good for me, so good to be back on this holiday, so... I was able to get down here, have some drinks. This is really bad. It's like setting in that we're like
the anxiety.
Actually talking about it with humans, not like over a phone or whatever.
Yeah, it's easier when you're just like chatting about it online. You don't actually have to feel the pressure, but when you're in a group talking about it,
it creates some anxiety. Right off the bat, I didn't even feel anything until all of a sudden you said, "This is Monday, May 27th. I'm like, the fuck are we still doing a podcast? Yeah. It's May 27th. I'm like, usually we're talking about transfers and spending our summer already thinking about the next season. And I'm like, that we're in a match week of the biggest importance and you said it's May 27th is just bananas.
We're usually on the peak.
Yeah, exactly.
And I kind of wanted to talk about that anxiety level, the nerves that I think we're all experiencing. And we had a pretty good question that's kind of... gets away. It's tough to actually think and talk about the game right now. And Connor Minetto has a question that kind of goes to that direction. It's detailed, but I think it's a pertinent way to break the ice here for us.
Yeah, it's a long one, so bear with me. I'm not the best reader in the world. Connor says, "I've been struggling to focus on the match itself and truly enjoy the moment. I've been thinking a lot about whether this is a peak of the Pochettino era or a turning point for more official success. What this means for player recruitment, what our club will look like in 5 years, and our financial position as a result of this run." So here's the question or questions. Should we remain focused on the task at hand as fans? How can we, given the nature of this accomplishment, relative to the last few years?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of with Connor. He's saying there that he's... I don't know, like struggling to focus. I think that's a good, like as a fan, fuck like focusing. It's the players you need to focus. For us, I'm still on cloud nine over the fact we're in the final. It's like, what is it, 2 weeks? I've lost track of time.
It's been two weeks.
It's just been like, it's not sinking in. Like I'm still catching myself at work, like on my lunch hour, Googling the highlights and rewatching them. I've got them saved on a video and I must have watched them like 150 times or something stupid. And I think as a fan, you know, just do it your own way. Don't just enjoy this is my advice really. We don't need to be focused. We just need to savor the fact that we're in a Champions League final. That's kind of what I'd say.
For me, it's been kind of the longest 2 weeks of my life, it feels like, in some ways. I'm just waiting and waiting. And we have all these other little minor cup final games and stuff that don't mean jack shit to us, that we just have to go through 2 weeks of this, like what happens in the championship. It really, we don't give a crap because we're in the Champions League final. That's what all we care about. But yeah, I totally understand what Connor's feeling here because it's tough to focus, but maybe we don't need to. Maybe Joe's right.
Yeah, I legit thought it was like this past Saturday that we just had like all week. I was like at the beginning of the week, I was like, all right, it's fucking almost here. And then I like looked at the calendar. I was like, fucking hell, we got a whole nother week after this. Like, what the fuck? And I'm doing the same thing as Joe, like just constantly at work. Like I'm just like going on Twitter and looking at all the videos and shit. And it's just we're going to have another question later about like the Cubs and how it was like similar to that. And it's a completely different experience because this is like worldwide. You're seeing shit and the Cubs, it was very like, I don't know, in Chicago, like everything was happening right here. But it is like, it's so hard. Like Connor says, like, I can't focus at work. My wife is like killing me because I'm singing and humming songs like constantly at the house. Like
that one, I'm guilty of.
I pick my daughter up and like spin her around. I'm like, we're in the Champions League final.
I've caught myself on several occasions just in the middle of class, just being like,
yeah, that's the one too.
I keep humming it and thinking it to myself. But it's funny because Anthony mentioned how like these 2 weeks have been such a long 2 weeks, and it's so funny because I remember in March thinking to myself, oh my God, we got like this 3-week layoff. We had a 21-day layoff, and then we had to play Liverpool. And I'm like, this is the most stressful thing. I'm like, I'm so, and it was, I think it was Burnley.
It was Burnley. It was Burnley we lost
going
rest.
Into it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is going to be a nightmare. I'm like, we have 21 days off and then we play Liverpool. Nothing could be more stressful than this. It's like 2 months later, I'm like, well, we have 21 more days off and then we play Liverpool. And it's the most stressful thing I've ever had in my entire life. So
what are you feeling on this?
Yeah, I just can't get my head around it. I really can't. I can't get my head around the fact that we're in the final. I can't get my head around the fact that it's so far away. You know, it's been so long and it's still over a week away. I can't get my head around, you
less
know...
Less than a week now, Rick.
Yeah.
You're losing track of the days,
it's like you guys. I've been just so distracted by thinking about it at the oddest times when I'm supposed to be concentrating on something else and suddenly I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to stop thinking about this.
I've been able to put it aside a lot, like, because there has been so much time. It's just, it's when you do come back to think about it, it just, you realize how much time is creeping. I've been able to, you know, just focus on my work and, like, have a nice weekend without having games to worry about.
No, I've been waking up in the middle of the night and, you know, thinking, shit, it's still over a week away and, you know, stuff like that.
It's still not settled in for me, honestly. It still hasn't settled in. But it's, like, people talking about nerves and pressure and all that stuff, but I don't think there is nerves. Well, I don't know, everyone's different, but personally for me, it's a bonus almost. And I you could probably say that's quite a negative, like, Spurs fan mindset of, you know, Real Madrid fans don't see it as a bonus or, you know, they'll see it as a regular game. But for us, it's uncharted territory. We've done so well to get there. I was nervous as hell about the top four. Don't get me wrong. I was completely shitting myself, to be honest, that we were going to completely mess that up, and we almost did. But this isn't nerves at all. It's just anticipation and the excitement for me.
Well, and to kind of answer Connor's question, which we kind of pushed to the side, I think, a little bit, I don't know that we at this point, like, I can even really think about the big picture. I mean, how do we think about the big picture moving forward? We're going to have all summer to think about the big picture. Right now, we have this big moment to think about, and that's kind of where I'm at.
And that's something that, like, with the big picture, it's no matter what happens on Saturday, the big picture is that we now put ourselves on the map and will be recognized as somewhere that for transfers, somewhere that you want to go. That guy that the PSG guy that said Tottenham wasn't a big club or whatever. Well, you guys got knocked out by United in the round of 16, and we're standing here in the Champions League final. So please have at it. Again, the irony that we got Lucas Moura from PSG because they were trying to finance Neymar, who they believed would take them to this exact spot. And then Lucas Moura gets a hat-trick in the second half of a Champions League semifinal and sends us through to the final.
What a buy.
So all of that kind of stuff is – that already has written itself, and we are financially in a place that is only going to go up. For me, it's the nerves come from how rare these moments are and how random they are. Because if I know one thing about sports, it's that – just because you're at the top of the mountain doesn't mean you'll ever get there again. And it can be injuries, it can be bad luck, it can be anything crazy. Again, we're the most injury-prone team of all time. We could have the next... It wouldn't shock me in the least if on day one next season, Harry Kane, Eriksen, if he's there, Dele, and like the whole team tears their ACL in one game, it wouldn't shock me. Because that's Spurs, that's just who we are. We just get dealt these hammer blows. So it's... Just because that's why I feel all this pressure is I'm like, we are 90 minutes away. And just because everything is going in the right direction and we might now have the finances to win trophies, win FA Cups, win League Cups, compete for the league or actually compete for the Premier League. But there's no guarantee that we will ever get this draw again and we will be 90 minutes away from this kind of glory.
And that's a good transitionary point. We are 90 minutes away. And we have to talk about this game. Prior to moving into talking about the game, I think it's going to be a tough conversation to have because it's tough to be unbiased about a game like this and look at guess what's really going to happen, who we're going to play. But we did actually seek out some insight from a Liverpool fan, a mate of Joe's, John, came on to do trash talk for us. So, like, you've known John for a while, Joe?
Yeah, he's one of my best mates. I've known him since we were kids, and he's a very rare example of a reasoned and rational Liverpool fan. So pinch yourself.
Not too many of them.
Yeah, there's not many. If you're ever on Twitter, you'll know that. But yeah, he's a good guy. So yeah.
Right, and I think it's probably good to hear it from their point of view first before we kind of try and dive in ourselves. So let's go to Trash Talk with John.
Trash Talk. It's John. I'm a Liverpool fan, and this is Trash Talk. I've been a Liverpool fan all my life. As you can tell from my accent, I'm certainly not a Liverpoolian. My mates would say this is a good thing. I support Liverpool purely because my old man was a United fan, so I thought it'd be quite funny to spite him to support Liverpool, much in the same way that when Arsene Wenger took charge of Arsenal, my brother thought it'd be funny to spite me support them. Anyway, so yeah, wow, you know, Liverpool and Spurs really pulled those results from somewhere special to qualify from the grid. Klopp's turned around and said that there is no pressure on Liverpool. I absolutely disagree. We have lost the last three finals under his management. We've lost the last two UEFA Champions League we've been in. After the performance and ultimate disappointment of this league season, I'd say more than ever, we need to win this trophy so we're not just remembered for being the team that would have won the league with that points total by the last two since the top division's inceptions over 100 years ago. You know, the logic in me says we only lost one game and we lost that to Man City, a.k.a. sports washing, money whores, and they won the league. So, you know, I'm just trying to rationalise the way that it all panned out in the end. So, yeah, we are very strong currently. I'd argue that this is probably the best Liverpool side in my memory. You know, we're strong right across the whole team. Start at the back, Alisson, Van Dijk, the wing-backs, Robertson and Trent. Which Robertson, you know, is one of my favourite players. Just seeing the way he's come on under Klopp's management has just been brilliant. Right across midfield, we're good. Apart from Henderson, for me, he's had a slight resurgence. But how long will it last before he's back to, you know, one good game in ten? I'm not going to pick one of the front three. For me, the most important player, I'm going to go for Fabinho. Second half of the season, he's really come to the fore. He's not afraid to get stuck in. He can break down playability and he can pass the ball, of which he chases. He can run all game. You could say, you know, he is the perfect Klopp player. And he's not afraid to get stuck into a guy. You know, he's really going to give Son, Kane, if he plays, you know, Eriksen, he's really going to make it hard for them, as hard as he can. We've not had a player of his calibre in that position with his quality since Mascherano in that number six role for nearly a decade, you know. I just, you know, he just gives that extra protection to the back four that we've not had for so long. So Fabinho, for me, I'm looking to him to be one of our most important players in this final. And after all that, he probably won't even start. Spurs player I'm most wary of, you know, Lucas. Wow, you know what game he was. He was phenomenal in the last match. You know, Eriksen and Ali, they can split any defence. Kane, if he plays, we all know what he can do. He's one of the best strikers in the world, fit or not fit. He's still going to put a real shift in. You know, even if he doesn't start, you know, he's still going to come in. He's still going to be a real worry for our lads when he comes on. But, you know, for me, the one lad that's, he goes under the radar constantly, his Son. You know, he's so underrated. You know, I believe this works in his favour on the pitch. You know, the focus is on Kane, it's on Ali, it's on Eriksen, and then you've got Son. You know, he's great in the box, he's great with both feet, and he can really take a man on, which, you know, really scares defenders. You know, so Son's the one lad I'm super wary of in this final. I really hate doing score predictions. They always come back to haunt me. But anyway, let's go. I'm going to go 2-1 Liverpool. Spurs take an early lead, and then Liverpool are going to score two really late second half goals, and we're going to lift this six elusive European Cup, I hope. Anyway, thanks for having me. This has been John on Trash Talk.
Well, thanks for that, John. I think that was a very insightful segment. We'll definitely dive into some of his thoughts give some thoughts of our own. But first, let me just set up the game like I normally would. Not that I think any of these stats matter in a game like this, and I understand that, but let's just do it anyway for old time's sake. So currently, Liverpool, well, we play Liverpool this Saturday, June 1st at 2 p.m. If you're coming to the bar, make sure that you get here at least at 10 a.m., maybe earlier. I think people are lining up at 9:30 for the 10 o'clock open. So if you're coming to Atlantic, make sure you're here early. There's going to be limited space.
If you're watching in Oklahoma City, contact me and we'll hang out. That's a story that's coming up later.
But currently, Liverpool sits... Well, they finished in second place in the league with 97 points. That's 30 wins.
Insane.
Can you imagine?
I think it's either 8 or 7. I screwed up my typing here, but it's either 8 or 7 draws and 1 loss. Their most recent form, they won to Wolves at the last day of the season, 2-0. Prior to that was the win to Barcelona that put them into the final. A win to Newcastle prior to that. A loss to Barcelona that we all thought was going to end them. And then a win to Huddersfield prior to that. Currently, their top scorer is Sadio Mane with 22. Salah also has 22 goals, so two top goal scorers there. Their top assist man is Trent Alexander-Arnold with 12, Robertson with 11, so right behind him, who John mentioned in his segment. Top-rated player is Mane with 7.54, Virgil van Dijk right behind him with 7.51, so some talent. The last five times we faced them, we of course, lost both times this year to them. We drew prior to that, beat them prior to that, and then going back to 2017, it was also a loss to them, 2-0. So, I don't think these results really matter when you get to a Champions League final, but we can clearly they're a talented team and there's a lot to digest here of what we're going to be facing.
Yeah, I wasn't like super nervous before we listened to that, and then afterwards I was like, "Fuck, all right, it's really like starting to settle in." One thing I disagree with him on is the Liverpool player. He talked about Firmino being the guy. I think. Mane is the guy we need to worry about the most. He's going to just tear Trippier a fucking new one.
I don't think Tripp's going to play, though. I think it's going to be Serge.
Wishful thinking, mate. Yeah. Trippier is playing, for sure.
And then you got Trent Alexander-Arnold on the same side as Tripp's, too.
No, it's he'll be on the other side. It's Robertson who's on that side.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but they're both lethal.
Sorry. It's Robertson. But, yeah, I think... Those three, like you said, I mean, those two with all the assists.
Well, 12 assists from a defender, right? I mean,
and 11,
yeah.
It's well, 23 from their two fullbacks.
Yeah. From their two fullbacks.
That's incredible. It's got to be a record. It's got to be. It's unbelievable.
And they got Robertson cheap, right?
Yeah.
Hull got relegated.
I think he was a pretty affordable player, yeah.
That's what a buy that was. Both of them are just ridiculously good. I do... like that he's worried about Son because this not knowing what's going to happen with Harry, like we are putting all our eggs in Son, I think. But yeah, fuck man, I am like more nervous now than I have been.
I think the one thing that I took from that segment was when he said this is the best Liverpool team he's seen, and rightfully so. I mean, again, we both laughed. You and I both scoffed and laughed out loud when they said 97 points and you were in second. Like, that's bananas. But I think the thing that I'm so pessimistic, obviously, when you're Spurs for this long, it's like all you have is pessimism and you're picturing everything that could go wrong. And I think the one thing that gave me a little bit of optimism there was the fact that he said this is the best Liverpool team that he's seen, because I'm like, this isn't the best Spurs team that I've seen. I could name about five different Spurs sides that could smash this one, which means nothing makes sense. So if this is the best Liverpool and we're playing them, and I think the last 2 years of Spurs could smash this current team, then who the hell knows what's going to happen? It's all about who shows up on the day, and that's what we've been making a habit of in the Champions League, is not obviously throughout the whole campaign, but let's show up on the day and see what happens. Because when we show up on our day, there's not a lot of teams that can hang with us.
One of the things I found interesting that John said was Klopp had said that this was no pressure for them, and he obviously disagreed and felt that this is total pressure for them.
Nonsense.
Do you think they're under? Do you guys think they're under more pressure than we are?
100%.
Yeah, 100%. If they don't win this, they come second in the league. They don't win any English trophy, and they fall in the final again 2 years in a row.
And the Europa final too. So they would have lost three straight.
Oh shit! Yeah,
yeah, they would have lost three straight Europe finals.
They're just like, this is 100%. And Klopp. I mean, he's lost how many finals in a row?
A lot.
Like
it's like five or six, yeah. I think. I mean, they've still yet to win a trophy under Klopp,
right.
And that. To kind of John's point and what you guys are saying there, I agree, because he's been backed this summer, right? We finished above Liverpool last season, and we have done something like, I think it's 8 out of the last 10 seasons we finished above them. But they were backed in the summer, right? They bought Alisson for 80 million, and they bought Van Dijk the winter before, and then they bought Keita, Fabinho. So he's been backed in the transfer market, whereas Pochettino still really hasn't been given that that backing. So
No. Pochettino has been given the backing, he just hasn't spent the money.
Well, that's okay, well, it's one half dozen the other. I'm not looking to give blame. The point I'm making is Klopp has spent the money, either whatever the circumstances may be.
He adds to the pressure.
Exactly, Lucas. It adds to the pressure, whereas Pochettino can be like, that's what I'm saying with pressure. We didn't spend a fucking penny in the transfer window. So we've done amazingly to get there. Whereas you can argue with Liverpool, of course they've had a really good season. Of course they're a great team, but they still haven't won a trophy when they have had that backing financially.
Well, I take a different view of Liverpool, and you're all going to disagree with this, okay? Man City are a talented team, okay? They have talented players in every position. Liverpool are not. But what Liverpool do have is a work ethic. They work harder than any other team. They run faster, they sprint more, they close down more, they do all the work more than any other team. I wouldn't say they're more talented than us, they're certainly not more talented than Man City. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of good. They're a good team, but they're a different kind of good. You know?
I agree 100% with the second part of your statement, that they do all those things, but I also think that they're fucking really good.
Yeah.
I think that summer...
Man for man, I think we're equal to them.
I think we were last season, Rick. I think this is where my point about the backing comes in, because we finished above them last season, and I agree with you. If you look back, before they signed Alisson, before they signed Fabinho, I think you could have made that argument, but I think they moved ahead of us last summer. And you can't argue, because they finished 20... I don't know how many points finished above us, but
well,
it was a lot.
Saying, I think their work ethic is ridiculously good. I mean,
But Klopp, to his credit, look, he's not doing what Man City are doing and buying players for 70 million every time. He's buying Robertson from Hull for 7 million when they get relegated.
And making him work.
And making him a brilliant player. Making him work. But guy got, 12 assists or whatever. Best left back in the league, and he bought him on the cheap.
Because
so
he's running up and down and up and down and up and down and never stops.
Yeah.
Never stops.
But I think that's also kind of... It speaks a little bit to Klopp, because that's exactly what our thing is too. That's we have the same strategy.
Exactly.
They've spent money where we haven't, but their game plan and the way they play is no different than what we do. Because that's what we do, and that's why this is the first year since Klopp's been at Liverpool that he's finished above Pochettino. We've had the exact same thing. It's just our work rate. Now they've gone out and spend a little bit, and now the guys that are doing the exact same thing are more talented. So instead of having Trippier, who can't run, instead of having that, you now buy someone else. The last year's Champions League final, they put Karius as a weakness. So the next thing they do is they spend 70 million on a keeper. Like, for Christ's sake, we can't even spend 70 million for anyone, let alone a goalkeeper. So they've kind of went out and gone the extra mile to shore up these weaknesses.
Yes.
And implemented them into the same style, which you were talking about with that run, that work rate, that press. And that's the thing that's kind of scary, is it's like...
But I've also been very, very lucky with injuries.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't had any.
Absolutely.
You know, I think they had one or two, maybe.
Yeah, I think they had a 100%. Couple defenders out, didn't they? Yeah. Gomez got injured, and, well, Lovren's crap, isn't he? But he got injured. But you're right, they've not had the same injury
Trent
volume.
But we've also had,
that's the thing that we talked about on like previous pods, is without these injuries, we would never have discovered who we have in Harry Winks, or who we have in Moussa Sissoko, or who we have in Lucas Moura.
But that helps us next season, not this season.
True, but again, that's the whole thing where it comes down to 90 minutes, where that's this, you can kind of throw all of your analysis out the window for 90 minutes. It's who shows up.
It's a one-off.
Who shows up. To your point, Rick, though, they have areas where they certainly out-talent us.
Fullback
100%.
I would say the fullback should probably be the only place.
But again, that's down to
I don't know. I think you could make an argument that Mane can top Son a little.
I don't know.
That's close.
That's very tough.
That's a close one.
Yeah. I think the front three of either is comparable. I think central midfield and fullback, they've got stronger than
central
those.
Midfield is where I'm worried.
Well, they've got Henderson in central
midfield. No, mate. Fabinho is there. Yeah. Henderson probably won't even start, I don't think. Like John Robbo said,
Henderson wouldn't get on that bench.
And the player that they've turned Virgil van Dijk into, as much as we justifiably complained about how poorly he played last season, they've turned him into a player this year.
Van Dijk's a brilliant defender, isn't he? He's a great...
They have the best defense in the league. I mean, their defense is what we wished ours was a couple years ago when we were the best defense in the league.
I don't think it's the defense or the goalkeeper. I think it's because they played defensively. Do you see what I mean?
I kind of have a... My opinion is a little bit of like a mix between both. Their defense is so good because their offense, the best defense, is a good offense.
Yeah.
And the reason that their defense is so good is because when they play teams, and I've talked about the scoring early thing, it's one of my biggest pet peeves with us, but when they are able to score early on these teams in the Premier League, they all of a sudden just smash them because now there is no pressure in the defense. They're not locked in these battles like we are where it's 1-0 in the 80th or something like that, or 0-0 in the 85th, and we have to still be trying to press. They're able to...
Yeah, they're 3-0 up.
When you're 3-0 up, it's a lot easier to defend, and the other team is pretty much just calling it in, being like, F this. Like, you know what? It's 3-0. Let's not make it 6. When you're playing Bournemouth and you're up by 4 or 5, which we've done on, I think it was like Boxing Day, we smashed them. It's the same kind of thing. Their defense gets to have the pressure taken off when you have a 3-0 lead in the 15th minute.
Yeah.
Other team, other than maybe City, has that, where the best... Like I said, the best defense is that attack where they just smash somebody in the first 15 minutes. So to
put
them under that pressure,
can hold their own too.
They lost one game in the league. Like.
Please, don't let me say that that's discrediting their defense.
Yeah.
Van Dijk is the best defender in the Premier League, hands down. But we have the best partnership with defenders and our center backs. I would agree with that.
When they're at their best, I agree with that. Like, in 2 years ago, I certainly agreed with that.
They fucking better be. They've played together like their entire lives.
But it's also what Anthony said with health. Like, you don't get to this stage without a lot of luck. And that's what I was talking about earlier with we might never be back. It doesn't matter how good. We could be the best team ever. Again, PSG, teams that haven't gotten to this stage. It's you need that luck, and a lot of it is injury luck, and they have not had that. Again, fullbacks is where they outdo us 100%. What if we had healthy fullbacks this year and Serge was healthy the whole time? If Serge was healthy the whole time, he was Pochettino's choice from day one. In big games, that was who he went with, but he wasn't healthy. And a healthy Danny and a healthy Serge could have developed a real chemistry, and they could have actually been better than their fullbacks. But we didn't have that luck. We had every few weeks somebody was getting a crazy injury or appendicitis or this other kind of nonsense that we've had to deal with, and Liverpool hasn't.
Well, let's talk about how we're going to find that luck, because we really only need that luck for one game. So let's try and predict how we're going to line up in this game. And I think Poch can be tough to predict in these big games because he can surprise us a lot. But let's try and tackle it. And we do have a question on this from John Chats. He asked us about this.
Yeah, John asked us, so of this group of players, who starts? So he lists Rose, Dyer, Davies, Trippier, and Sanchez. Not necessarily who do you think should, but who will Poch start? I'll go ahead. I think Danny and Trippier are the only two on that list that start. I just don't think he's going to throw Surge out there. I know, Lucas, you're going to disagree with me there. But I don't see Dyer. Well, unless Winks isn't fit, I guess.
I think Winks,
he's been practicing.
Both Harrys seem to be
Available
for selection.
So I don't see Dyer getting in. I think Rose over Davies in this game 100 out of 100 times. And I don't, unless Poch decides to play three at the back.
Which I don't think it has not been going well for us, let's be honest.
No, it hasn't worked well this season.
So I think Rose and Trippier out of that group for me start.
Yeah.
Lucas, you're like, I think I'm going to agree with you, so you go ahead.
I think that we will see Surge start. And, again, that could be wishful thinking because I bought my Surge third shirt this summer, which was the biggest power move of all time, other than Nate Sissoko buy. But I think that we'll see. I think we will see Surge because of this reason, and it's lessons learned. And the reason I bring this up is because Klopp and Poch have played each other 9 times now since he's been at Liverpool. There have been 4 draws, 4 wins for Liverpool, and 1 win for us, and that was the 4-1 at Wembley. So other than that, Klopp has gotten the better of Poch all of those times. And we'll see. The reason that I bring that up is the Mourinho with the – we can use Mourinho as an example with the League Cup final. When we smashed them, we smashed Chelsea at home on New Year's Day that year. Wow. And then we didn't change. We threw the exact same game plan. We threw the exact same lineup out and got smashed at Wembley for the final.
6 weeks later, we went from a 5-3 to losing 2-0.
And then they did the same thing, Mourinho, with the new team last year where we smashed them. Eriksen scored in the first 10 seconds at Wembley.
Yeah.
We took down United, smashed them, and then a couple months later, it was the same thing. We threw out the same lineup against experienced managers. You have to throw something different that they're not used to, and because they learn. Mourinho was like, okay, well, that didn't work. What can I now do? Let's put Pogba on Dembele and take him out of the game. And
that's
how they
got that goal with Sanchez.
Yeah. And so you have to throw. Poch has to now spin that and say, look, I've thrown all I can in certain scenarios. This is what Klopp is used to. I now have to throw something that he hasn't seen, which is a healthy upfront Dele, Eriksen, Kane, Son, the desk, if you will. Or let's throw in, you know what? You don't get to just bombard us down the right side because Trippier's a ghost. Like, we now have somebody that can play.
I agree with you, Lucas.
I think Poch is going to learn.
I think especially with how poorly Trips has performed over the last couple weeks of the season.
Last 3 Champions League games, he's cost us like 5 goals.
So it's... just looking at that, like, I think if you have a healthy Arie, and I guess it's a big if he's healthy enough to play. I know he's been training. I think he's the guy that you have to go to in this situation. I think Trips is going to get rolled over by Mane. But
that's where you're right, and I think that is the difference, is it's not like it's a Winks or a Kane that we're rushing back. Surge has been training since before Ajax. He's been in first full team training. He's been doing all of that, so I think that's why it's different, is it's not like we're forcing it in where it's a wild card. Like, he's kind of fit. Maybe it's not. If it was any kind of doubt on fitness, there would be no chance. It would be Trip. But this one's different because he has been healthy, full first-team training for months.
Where are you at in this, Rick?
I like to think about this in a different kind of way. I don't like to think about who's going to play, who's not going to play, what fullbacks are going to play. I don't like to think about it like that. The way I'm thinking about it is there's 20-odd days between our last game of the season and this game.
Yeah.
Now, our last few league games have been awful.
Yeah.
Where, we were basically running on empty the whole time. We had players injured. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know, who was fit, who was not fit. We were really, really struggling. And the only games we weren't struggling in, for some reason, with the Champions League games. Now, you've got Liverpool, who finished the season, they came second. Their whole season, their whole way of playing is, high-powered, high-press, blah, 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 blah. And they were on a roll the whole season. They only lost one game, and they were on a roll, and they played, and then they suddenly got 21 days where they got not doing anything.
Yeah.
Now, they could sort of lose their edge because of that 21 days. With us, that 21 days is huge for us. You know, we can get players back that are injured. We can rest. We can get, you know, we can...
Train.
We can be, you know, we can take a breath. Whereas the whole near the end of the season, it's been horrible for us. You know, apart from, like I said, the odd Champions League game. So I think this 21 days is probably going to do us a lot of good and them not. I think they might lose their edge, and I think we might actually recover some really good form. So that's the way I'm looking at it, and I don't really mind who plays.
So who out of there? Answer the question, though.
Yeah,
who out of there plays? I know you're not thinking.
This is a
like
question
that.
From
Surgeon Danny.
Yeah,
I don't think Surgeon will start because he hasn't had any kind of consistent play.
So does Dyer, Davies, or Sanchez get in?
I don't think Dyer's going to play. He's been awful near the end of the season. Sanchez might play because he's speedy and we need him against Mane. So, yeah, Sanchez would be my only pick, really, and Rhodes probably.
So, it's funny you say that, Rick, about the rest, right? Because Carragher came out, I don't know if you saw.
I was going to bring that up, and I was like, Joe, get this.
Yeah, Carragher came out and said, he was basically essentially complaining that it suits Tottenham, just kind of like you're saying there, because our injured players have had that recovery period to get back. Just to kind of play devil's advocate, not that I disagree with Lucas, because I would also rather see Serge play, but if we're working under the kind of idea that Kane's going to play, Winks is going to play, and Serge potentially, that's three outfield players, none of whom have played a competitive game in months.
No, I mean,
that's not going to happen for me. I mean, I know, I take your point, Lucas, that Serge, I know, unfortunately, his father passed away and it wasn't just to do with injury issues. But I think that if you're looking at a Champions League final and you're going to put three, I think you can get away with putting one or two players in who haven't played. But I think if you've got like a third of the team having not played, it's a big gamble.
Okay, and yeah, let's get a quick response from Lucas.
Quickly. I think that's the most important thing, though, is we can't run out what we've been running out and just hope that we're going to get lucky like we have. Every one of those last magical games for us in these semifinals and the quarterfinals, we've made the same mistakes. And I always use the analogy, it's like getting kicked in the nuts. If you meet somebody that walks up to you and goes, hey, how's it going? And then just blasts you and kicks you in the nuts. And then he does it the exact next week, does the same thing. Next week, he does the same thing. At some point, it's your own fault. How about you move? Don't let somebody just kick you in the nuts. Move away. So to get beat on the same shit that we've been doing, I think that if we run out
Trippier
the same...
Trippier is the getting kicked in the nuts.
Yes, right? Yes. That is the reference there. But even
I feel that way. Yeah.
So I think that Poch has to know that at this point, you have to do something new. Because Klopp knows exactly how to destroy. Oh. It doesn't matter about match fitness, and you're absolutely right. To see three guys that haven't played since... I mean, when was the last time Winks was out? When was the last time Kane was April?
Winks and the two Harrys played against City at home when we won 1-0. That was their last game, both of them. And Serge's last game, Serge, I believe, was it not Dortmund?
It was Burnley. Or it was his last start was Dortmund away.
Right, so that's like 3 months ago.
But that's why I'm thinking that it's like Poch needs to know that you can't run the same thing out there and expect Klopp to just not and just absolutely bombard us through our weaknesses. He knows our weaknesses. He's beat us 2-1 right. Twice this year.
I've got an idea.
You've got to throw something that he hasn't seen, and I think that's why we will throw someone out there right. That hasn't. Match fitness, it all goes out the window.
Here's my curveball prediction. Sissoko right back.
Oh, fuck.
I guess. You know what, though? I would be okay with it. And everyone was... Yeah. Everyone bombarded Poch for putting Son at right wing back against Chelsea in the semifinal 2 years ago in the FA Cup. And I was so okay with it because I'm like, look, we tried something that didn't work.
Didn't work at all.
But we knew exactly what was going to be the result had we thrown Trippier out there. He couldn't play wingback. Yeah. He can't. So Poch was like, let's try something new in a big moment that...
They're not expecting.
That they're not ready for. And I absolutely appreciate that. And I would rather us do that than throw out the same bullshit that we've seen. And we've seen what a team of this caliber can do to it. So... Again, you could go into so many ways in which they could hurt us if we throw out the same thing that they're ready for. I would rather us try something new that they're not ready for, and I will be able to live with the results knowing that we tried something, not just ran out the same crap and got pummeled.
Well, and on Lucas's point on Trippier, and I think they are aware that Trippier is a problem. because it looks like he's, we'll talk transfer second half, but it looks like he's got one foot out the door right now. And I think that's an indication that maybe the trust has gone after these last few games, and maybe we might be right on Trippier not playing this one.
And it's not even just like, it's not even just being on the right wing or as a right back that he could hurt us. We saw against Ajax with, was it De Ligt?
Well, he was, why was he marking De Ligt? I don't even blame Trippier for that.
Absolutely insane.
But that's the point that scares me, is they had De Ligt scored against Juve and Madrid and had headers off corners off all these big games for them, and we still were like, no, Trip's going to get him.
It was like,
so what do you think we're
going to
do against Van Dijk?
That's like
this is what Van Dijk is like.
If I see Trippier marking Van Dijk on a corner, mate, I'll be having an attack.
We have to be able to learn from our mistakes and try something different.
But you can't blame Trippier for that, though. That's the organization of the team.
No, absolutely. I completely agree, and that's why I think that he can't be out there.
Yeah.
Well, and on Joe, on your point where there was three guys all coming back from injury that it looks like we might be considering starting if we started REA too, this might be a good transition into another one of our questions. So we've got the questions from Suge on Harry, don't we?
Yeah, he just said thoughts on Harry. Should he start or be brought on as a sub?
So maybe, what is Harry Kane starting? Do people think he's certainly starting? This is a big debate across the Spurs sphere, I think.
Yeah, it's a massive debate. I think it's probably going to be the defining decision for Pochettino what to do. And I think he will play Harry, and I think there's two reasons for that. One, the stature that Kane's built up, and quite rightfully so, with his own, you know, brilliant play over the last few years. He's got to that point where I don't think we can not play him if he's available. He's kind of earned that spot, you know. Secondly, he's our best striker. He's our best attacking player. For example, would Liverpool are in a similar dilemma, right? Origi scored twice against Barcelona. Do you really think Origi's going to start over Salah in the final? They're going to say, no, Salah's a better player. He's going to play. And as horrible as it is, and Lucas Moura will be a legend forever in my mind, and they should build a fucking statue of a guy, unfortunately, I don't think he'll play. I think Kane will start, and I think it'll be what Lucas said, Ali, Eriksen, and Son behind him. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Joe. And just real quick to point out, when we bought Lucas, I was like, that man's going to do something special for us. And he did.
Oh, you were?
But yeah, I think if Harry is healthy, 100%, he's going to play. Like, there's no... I don't think you could even tell him no, like Joe said. Like, at this point, if he says he's playing, he's playing. He's the best striker in the world.
But that's a good problem to have,
right?
Lucas Moura on the bench in case Harry doesn't look good.
The like narrative, there. I have an Arsenal fan at work that has been telling me for weeks, oh, if Harry comes back, you guys are so bad with Harry. And I'm like, are you fucking out of your fucking mind, dude? Like, you're insane. He is the best striker in the world. Like, period, end of story. You play him even if he's like 80%. Yeah. You fucking put him out there. It's a Champions League final. It's like we've been saying, it is 90 minutes. We need our best players on the pitch.
But really quickly, I'm going to jump in. That is the one dilemma that I want to present, is it's not 90 minutes. What if it's 120?
Well, then you...
That's where you get screwed, because it's... Yes, we do have the extra sub, but maybe he's...
You bring
if
Lucas
he's like,
on as
if he's 70%,
fucking...
but imagine it's 120 and you sub him off and it goes to penalties and you've now taken arguably the best penalty taker in Europe.
I don't think he would come off.
So you're going to risk him for 120 minutes?
100%.
He could become a liability if he gets
England
tired.
In the World Cup, he could hardly fucking move, and he stayed on for penalties against Colombia when he was injured,
yeah,
right?
If he goes on, he's not coming off, unless we're
and he still
don't need him to be on the pitch.
They really, I'm going to get a lot of shit for this, but they really shouldn't start Harry Kane. And there's a very good reason for this. One, he's not match fit. I don't care what people say. He won't be match fit. He'll be able to run. He'll be able to turn. He'll be able to sprint. But he won't be match fit. Okay? The last thing we need to happen is for him to start the game, play 15 minutes, get injured and go off. Because the demoralising effect on the rest of the team will be huge.
But if you're bringing Lucas on, is it really? No, I mean, the man just scored a hat. I know it would have an effect.
You're talking about Harry Kane.
I just said he's the best striker in the world.
Look what it did to Liverpool when Salah went off last year. It was that demoralizing thing. And when he went off hurt, they just
but they didn't
like
know
ghosts.
That they could do it without him.
Right. You know?
We've proved ourselves that we can do it without him.
That is a good point.
So to me, it's much better to start with a team that you know is fit. Hopefully, you know, maybe get a lead or get, or, you know, or stay in the game. And at then some point, you can then bring Harry Kane on. And then the effect on the opposition will be worse. You know, instead of it potentially being a demoralising effect on us for him having to go off, it'll be a optimism thing of him coming on. You know, suddenly, maybe we're 1-0 up, Lucas Moura scored, I mean, it's the 53rd minute. Then you bring Harry Kane on, and suddenly we go, he'll score and we're 2-0 up. Do you see what I mean?
You're making a very good argument, Rick. I just don't think it'll happen, mate. You've argued your case very well, but I just don't see Poch not starting.
Well, this is the point I was going to make. That's what I want to happen. Poch and Harry will never do that in a million years.
Yeah.
If Harry's fit, he'll start because Poch will just start him.
And I think the unfortunate thing for Pochettino, and we talked about how having all these guys back is a good problem to have. Unfortunately for Pochettino, this is going to be a legacy-defining decision, and it's going to have nothing to do with his decision. If we were to go out there with Kane, Kane starts, we lose, everyone's going to say, well, why the hell did we start Kane? He wasn't fit. Shouldn't have happened. If we go out there and lose and we don't start Kane, everyone's going to be like, oh, you should have started Harry. How do you not start the best striker in Europe? So it's going to be he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I think the downside is it's going to show it's about us. Do we show up?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what decision he makes. If the 11 that he selects goes out there and actually shows up, we'll win. If we don't, we're gonna lose, and it's gonna be everything's gonna come back to his tactics and his decisions, which is really unfortunate because he's kind of got his hands tied in this one where it's you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah.
I just I agree with some of the points you made, Rick, about bringing him on as a sub. That would be a great option, but if he was able to walk into the locker room at halftime and give the speech that he supposedly gave. Imagine what he is going to get out of them when he's on the field fucking getting in their faces and yelling at them.
Liverpool isn't Ajax.
Yeah, but he's a fucking leader that is out on the pitch. Hugo is a great leader, but he's so far away from everything so often. I feel like and Harry just does so fucking much for us when he's on the pitch.
I'm mixed on this because it's fucking Champions League final. Everything's out the window. Like, if you've got the best striker in the world, you put him out there. But also, we've also seen him come back from ankle injury and have piss-poor performances that we can't seem to win after he returns.
Yeah.
And I think that's partially what Rick's looking at and just saying, like, if he's not fully fit, I'd rather have him come in off the bench and then and have that impact sub.
I'm more worried about him injuring again and then the demoralising effect on the team if it happens.
I don't think you get
demoralised. But I trust our physios and everyone to be fully... They're not going to take a risk on him, though. I mean, he could have come back. Like, he was running against Ajax, wasn't he, when he came on the pitch, but he didn't play the next game.
He actually said...
It was just because he was going forward.
He was only allowed to run in a straight line.
Yeah, he wasn't allowed to make any cuts or pivots. He was only allowed to run forward. Yeah. But
that's all you need is a striker, isn't it?
Yeah, I think with him, it's... If we're going to go down, I would rather see him out there. But again, it has to be Rick's right. It has to be that he is fully fit. And again, who are we to judge? He's always shocked us with his ability to come back. He wasn't supposed to come back with his first one that he got against United this year. He wasn't supposed to be... He was supposed to be out for 3 months.
He's always come back
for
really
Burnley.
Early, hasn't he?
He has. The problem is that I foresee is it's not that him being out there is the problem. It's everyone else... We seem to play a different way, and everyone else seems to step up in different ways when he's not there.
That's true.
And that's why against
Especially
Burnley.
Especially Son. Son plays so much
and against
better
Burnley, you could say, like, oh, well, he came back and he scored. Absolutely. And that play was brilliant. Like, the throw-in from Danny Rose, and he came back, and he had that amazing goal. But everyone else seemed to forget what the hell they were supposed to do and like how they were playing with Harry Kane. They all seemed to panic and play shit, and he was the only one that did play well. So that's kind of what I see with Rick is if he is 100% healthy, yeah, you throw him out there. If not, is it worth sacrificing the play? Yeah. And again, it's a silly argument because you should be able to play with the best player in the world. But we seem to have like established this criteria where we all seem to forget what we're doing when he comes back in.
One more quick point, and then we're going to have to transition.
Yeah, I'm totally about to argue against everything that I've just said, but in the Spanish Cup final, Barcelona ended up... Messi had the ball at the end of their attack, like 33% of the time or some shit like that, which is like double the most of it, like ever, basically. And it's because like they were just fully going through Messi the whole game, and it didn't work, and they lost 2-1 or 2-0 or whatever it was.
For Valencia,
and I do agree that sometimes we do try to rely on Harry too much, but I think we're a little bit different than Barcelona, where we do have, not that they don't have other outlets, but like they really just like give Messi the ball and are like, dude, do your thing. But yeah, I mean, it can definitely be... We don't fucking know what we're talking about, right? Like, we're just like, please just do whatever makes it give us the win. Like, I don't care.
But just very quickly as well, though, you've got to think, not taking away from Harry, look at Lucas Moura. The guy scores a fucking hat trick.
And you might have to bench
him. I mean, I think he's the easy guy to bench as well. Like, I feel like he'd be all right about it. You know, he'd be like, yeah, no, he just seems that sort of character. And I just think there's something inherently like unfair that might happen, you know.
But it is on Poch, and that's the character that he's instilled in everyone, is they realize that us winning is more important than you playing starting. It's all about, and that's why I don't think, because people were like, oh, well, if you don't play Lucas, he's going to want out. Like, no. That's why Poch selected him. That's why Poch has him part of this culture that
it's
we built.
It's
a squad game. Yeah. The important thing is us winning the trophy and holding that fucking thing up chugging beers out of it like Danny did. Like, that's the whole goal. It doesn't matter who plays and who doesn't. You think Michel Vorm's going to be like, damn, I'm so bummed about winning this trophy because I didn't play. No, he's going to be like, this is the greatest moment of my life. And I think that's something that we will see with, regardless of who gets selected, it's all about the collective goal, and that's something that comes back to Poch.
Yeah, he's not Pogba or anyone.
No, he's not and we don't have anyone like that on our team, which is the best part.
Well, we had one last question, but I'm going to kind of skip it. I think, Kevin, you already kind of answered it first half. Shubes, thanks for the question. It was about whether if we win, would it be like the Cubs winning? Since Kevin's the only Cubs fan here, I think he already commented on it, so there's probably not going to be much else for us to say on it. But thank you. Keep the questions rolling. We appreciate it. But I do want to go to predictions, and as we go through predictions, I also want you to kind of predict what style we're going to play here, because we've talked a little bit about who we're going to play, and who knows. But like, what's our style like going to be? Attack, defensive, cagey? Go right after him right away, come out of the box strong. Tell me what your thoughts are on how we're going to handle this game. And I'm sure we'll all be wrong, but let's try anyway.
Well, look, I think that Liverpool and ourselves, like someone alluded to earlier, I forget who said it, but with very similar teams, we play a very similar style. Our managers have similar philosophies. I think we're both going to go for it. I think for a neutral, it's going to be a fantastic final. It's not going to be one of these ones where they're sitting back, and I just think both teams are going to go for it. Like in the last league game, I thought was great. I know we lost at Anfield very narrowly, and I thought we were really, really unlucky, by the way, to lose that game. I kind of see it playing out like that game did, like two teams going at it, very similar styles, similar tactics. It's going to be high intensity. In terms of a prediction, Kevin, my friend here to my left, is ahead of me in the prediction, so I have to come up with something crazy in order to somehow pip him to the predictions crown. So I'm going to say we're going to win, obviously, but I'm going to go for some unusual scorers. Alderweireld has not scored this season, I don't believe. He's going to score in this game off a corner. I'm going to go with Kane's.
Who's
going to
take the corner? Who gets it over the first
man? Yeah. Eriksen's going to miss kick it, and it's going to actually go over someone's head. But yeah,
Or Lamella comes on at
Lamella,
the end.
Just for the corner, man.
Send him off just for the corner.
Yeah, just bring him on. But, and I think Harry will score. as well. I think he will start, like we already discussed, and I think he'll score, and I'm going to go for Dele Alli for the other goal. But yeah, 3-1 to Spurs. But in terms of the game, I think it's going to be a really entertaining open game with two really exciting teams who play football the right way. You're not going to get any of this Mourinho park of the bus stuff. I think they're both going to play expansive, open, attacking football.
Okay, Kevin, what do you got?
I have a little bit of an advantage going second, yeah, I guess.
Fuck. Don't just pick what I did.
exact same thing. No, I'm not. This is like probably the hardest prediction we'll ever probably have to make on the podcast.
Let's hope we have another one of these next year.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Joe. It's going to be very, very open. I think, like you said, both teams are going for it. I think it's going to be high scoring. I think both squads are going to score some goals. I'm going to say 3-2 to Tottenham, obviously. And I think it's going to be like we get an early one, they go up, we come back to equalize, and then get a late one. My three goal scorers are going to be Harry's going to get two, and what do you know? Lucas Moura comes on as a sub and scores the winner to fucking just. I mean, like Joe said, he's already a fucking legend, but that just cements a statue in front of the new stadium.
Okay, Lucas?
All right, well, for me, the reason that I'm bricking this so much, not just because of the pressure of what this game means, but it could change everything for the rest of our lives with Spurs. And think about any time a gooner says a wise crack at you, immediately it could just be like, well, you can go
Champions
fuck
League?
Off. Yeah, exactly. Like, well, we could literally end all of that. And I think that the reason that I think it's that kind of stuff that has me so pessimistic here, because every time we've been in a moment that could change everything, we've found a way somehow to, and that's Spurs, just find a new way to rip your heart out of your chest. And I think that's why I'm a little bit shaken. But at the same time, it's 90 minutes, and you don't have to be the better team. There's no better example than the Chelsea Champions League final, where they got their ass whipped for 120 minutes and somehow walked away with the cup. So it could go either way. I think the reason that I'm going to say we actually lose, I'm going to predict 2-1 to Liverpool, is because...
Fuck you.
I have to say, it's because we've built this thing that we've been doing where we make these early mistakes, and that's what Liverpool thrives on. Liverpool is so much easier to play when you don't let them get the drop on you in the first 20 minutes. Oh. And we've just developed this habit where we make a dumbass mistake very early, and we've seen it throughout all of the Champions League, but have somehow we've been able to come back.
Yeah.
But Liverpool is not – they're not PSV. They're not Inter Milan. But like, even Barcelona, you could say, they really didn't care about that game at Barca away. And so I think that that habit that we've developed of making an early mistake, that it will kind of – I think our luck will run out if that's what we've done. And I have no other – I could be as optimistic and hopeful as I'd like, but we've established that this is what we do, is we make a dumbass mistake.
Yeah.
Ajax, we made a couple, and we're able to get through because that was Ajax, not Liverpool. Them in this game, they know what this means. They've played – they got 97 points with – out a cup or a trophy to hold up. So I think they will, if we make that dumbass mistake, which we've made our track record, and that's what we've been able to do, it's going to bite us. This is going to be too much. And I think it's going to be 2-1. Dele scores, but I don't think it's enough. I think we let them score early, and they jump on us.
I hope you're wrong. But
I hope so, too.
Let's hear from Rick, because I'm sure this will raise all of our spirits.
Yes.
I've been doing it the whole season, and I'm not changing now. We're going to win 6-0.
Could you imagine?
Jesus,
the best.
I think I would be dead.
I would just go live in the mountains somewhere, because what's the point? What's the point after that? Like,
I would not show up to work for a week.
I've done it the whole season, and the whole season we got to the Champions League.
And we've never won 6-0 once.
Well, we won. We did a 5-1.
We got
5-1.
6 against Everton, to be
fair.
We got
a 5-1, we got a 4-0. So... Dele Alli 3, Harry Kane 2, Lucas Moura 1.
Give Sissoko 1. You know he's got one in him.
I think you guys are dead on with, like, it is going to be this attacking style of play. We're both going to go after each other. It's going to be fun to watch.
Actually, it's
going to be agonizing for us. Say, but
it's not going to be fun at the
fun
time.
Fun to watch for who?
But I think
neutral.
Yeah, it's going to be the worst 90 minutes of my life.
And actually, in all seriousness, I actually think we'll probably win 1-0. And I actually think it'll be a very bad game. And the reason I think that is because all the pressure's on Liverpool. I think they're going to be very, very cagey. They're going to be worried about losing. When we're going to be a little bit freer than they are. And I think we'll probably end up winning 1-0. That will be my serious prediction.
Well, I think we're going to have to put that prediction in the bank for Rick, because I've never seen such such a reasonable prediction. I am going to be the person who goes out and says that this is going to be a 2-2, goes to 120 minutes and then penalties.
I would not.
My heart can't handle it.
I don't think my heart can handle it either. The Porta Johns in the back, the Cajal's getting to for the full bar, we'll have people crying in it by the end of this. But I think because what Rick predicted, that Harry Kane is going to come on as a sub, he comes in as a sub and carries us through those penalty kicks, and we win it in penalties.
If only he could take all five.
Well, Hugo's been on five penalties, to be fair. Hugo saved his last three penalties, hasn't he?
Yeah. So there you go. He's been looking better.
On form.
Oh, we could use our extra sub for Gazzaniga.
And there won't, those weren't slags either. That was Aubameyang and Aguero and Vardy. Yeah. So if he's got any left in him.
And the Aubameyang one's so huge, like looking back on it too, which makes it even better.
But I hope that we don't have to endure that, and I hope we get one of your wins. But I'm just going to predict
hopefully
it.
Hopefully not fucking Lucas's goddamn prediction.
Yeah, hopefully Lucas's.
Like I said, though, it's that thing with every time we've had these big moments, like even PSV at home, like we knew that was something we really needed, and 60 seconds in, they bang one in. Yeah. So we can't afford to make those mistakes against somebody like Liverpool.
But we've gone extremely long for this first half. I think we had to. The second half, we are going to talk for a little bit about transfer rumors. We'll have a very short second half, but we'll kind of talk about some of the stuff, answer a couple more questions. But now let's go to Tommy. Tommy's going to do a Champions League history segment.
It's time for Tommy's Week in Spurs History.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tommy, and this is your Champions League final history. May 24th of 1995, Ajax defeated AC Milan 1-0 in Vienna. The narrative of this final was a lot more interesting than the final itself. It was a young upstart Ajax side versus the seasoned Italian powerhouse. In the end, the young squad, headed by now legendary Louis van Gaal, got the victory with a late goal scored by Patrick Kluivert. May 28th of 2003 was one of the more boring Champions League finals. This final was played between Italian heavy hitters Juventus and AC Milan at Old Trafford. The score was tied 0-0 at the end of regulation as it went to penalty kicks. AC Milan won 3-2 with Andrei Shevchenko scoring the winner. May 26th of 2004 was the last final where a non-top 5 league won the Champions League. Porto played Monaco at the Gelsenkirchen. The route to the finals was full of upsets, as Monaco defeated Real Madrid in a quarterfinal thriller, and Porto defeated Manchester United in the round of 16. This final was pretty interesting, as it was noted for having two previously unknown managers, Jose Mourinho and Didier Deschamps, and a previously unknown players, Deco, Patrice Evra, among others, appear in this final. Unfortunately, the final was not as exciting, as Porto won 3-0. Goals were scored by Carlos Alberto, Deco, and Dmitry Alenichev. May 17th, 2006, Barcelona defeated Arsenal 2-1 in Paris. This final had its fair share of ups and downs. In the 18th minute, Arsenal goalkeeper Jens Lehmann took down Samuel Eto'o outside the box and was red carded. To make things more complicated, the man who shall not be named gave Arsenal the lead in the 37th minute. After lots of promises and chances, Barcelona scored two goals in 4 minutes from Samuel Eto'o and Giuliano Belletti to seal the win. I'm Tommy, and this is your Champions League final history.
Thanks, Tommy. Great segment. Definitely some interesting stuff in Champions League history there that I wouldn't have thought about, and kind of gets us in the mindset for playing a Champions League game. Before we kind of shift into the transfer rumor conversation, I kind of want to ask you guys, and this was a question from Lucas, but I'll ask it to everybody. So this was obviously there were some very big highs with this Champions League campaign.
Yeah, they're all right.
just a few.
but there was also some pretty big lows. So I want to talk about what some of everybody's biggest lows were in this Champions League campaign. So what were they for you guys?
Mine's recent because I don't remember like the first half. I don't feel like at this point.
Seems like 4 years ago
when Sterling scored the goal. I literally like walked out of the bar. I don't think I've been on the pod since then, so I don't know if this story's out there or not. Walked out and was just like sitting on the curb outside the bar, like thinking that it was over. And then all of a sudden I hear this like eruption from inside. So it was like I had my absolute low of the season followed immediately within seconds by like this massive high of like walking in. And if you've ever been to the Atlantic, when you walk in, there's like some glass doors and you can see one of the TVs right through there. And I just saw like the no goal allowed or disallowed goal or whatever the fuck it is, VAR picture. And just immediately jumped into a sea of fucking people going crazy.
Well, I think the worst was actually the most recent, the second Ajax goal.
That's pretty bad too.
Yeah.
Because we were 1-0 down and then they scored again. And that second goal was like the killer. It's like, oh, we're definitely out now.
You're right, because the first goal meant nothing because we would have had to get two anyways, but the second one was anyway.
Once they got that second, we were like, oh, shit. You know.
Yeah, that was pretty low.
We're away from home. We now need four goals or three goals to tie up the game. We weren't playing particularly well. They were all over us. And it's a semi-final. It was just like the worst moment.
Yeah, it was a pretty big low. How about you, Lucas?
I'll actually challenge what Kevin said because he said that it was one of the... Not only was that one of the worst lows, that was one of the worst lows of my life. Was. Yeah. I've never had that emotion where you go from the worst... It would literally be like somebody telling you that one of your loved ones died. And then 15 seconds later, being like, actually, just kidding. We had the wrong person. They're okay. Yeah. It's like I've never had a moment where the life was sucked out of me. And then 30 seconds later, like, actually, just kidding. You're still going to win. Yeah,
that's
like,
actually it was, perfect.
Yeah, it was. Perfect. It was like nobody. And again, that's the beauty of football and sports in general, is that that's that kind of emotion that you can't find anywhere else. It was a death blow. And then 60 seconds later, you're back in it. But my low, personally, was that first PSV game because I knew even though we had no points from the first six, and like we probably weren't going to beat Barcelona anyway. Yes, the whole thing was we needed to be better than Inter. We knew PSV is not going to go through. Barcelona is probably going to win the group. But it was us versus Inter. So they got the first one. Okay, we still got another shot against them. Let's get some points now against PSV. And that was that first one that was in Eindhoven where – they went up in like the 20-something minute. We fought back, got the 2-1 lead, and then had that 81st minute red card from Hugo. And that was the moment there. I was just like, oh my God, if we can't get through this, like we're done. Like this is over. So that was when that was my low of the Champions League, was right there in Eindhoven thinking that 1 point from 9, we were dead and buried. Because now we needed to rely on other people to help us out. And
I won't even chime in because you just picked my low so that I had the same one. Mm-hmm. It was so... Like, we forget about that early campaign and how horrible it felt. Like, none of us thought we were even getting out of this group to make it as far as we have. It's just such an improbable journey that we've had.
Yeah, I kind of stole my thunder as well. I was thinking the same thing of the PSV game. It was because the other moments, we already had the glory of beating Dortmund, giving, even with the Sterling moment, which is the most, to answer the question honestly, that's the fucking biggest, like, demoralizing moment.
Like, the timing and
like,
everything.
And that we gave it to him with the Eriksen turnover. Like,
that was just so painful. But, I mean, we didn't, at the point that Lucas and Anthony are saying, we'd not even got that. Like, we'd lost to a very average Inter Milan team away. Then we really shot ourselves in the foot against Barcelona by conceding a goal after, like, 3 minutes and then give ourselves an uphill task. So I'd agree that the PSV game was a real low point. But just quickly on the Sterling thing, I mean, I think that's just forever. Like, the pain of it just means it's immortalized in our brains. Yeah. Like, I've told this story on the pod before because I was on the pod after that game. But, I mean, you laugh at me if you want. I couldn't fucking watch the second half. I had to go on a drive. I just couldn't take... I honestly, I've never done this ever in 25 years I've been a Spurs fan, but I could not fucking watch the game. So I had to go on a drive. And I turned my phone on when I thought the game must be over, just to give myself that, like, pain or whatever of seeing, oh, City won, like, 5-2 or whatever, or 5-3. Yeah. And then when, literally the second I turned the phone on, Sterling's scoring a goal and the crowd's going mental and it says 5-3 in the 96th minute. And I just sank to my knees in this, like, building and I couldn't believe it. And then I was getting texts saying VAR straight away. They were coming through because in England it's ahead of the feed we're getting. So they was already saying disallowed, disallowed, disallowed. And that, like, 30 seconds was just, like, so emotional. And then I went to this car park outside the building and I was like a fucking mental patient, like screaming, like, yes, couldn't believe it. So that's always a moment that we can, like, look back with incredible emotion about, for sure.
And one of the funny things too is I remember being on the pod. There was only a handful of us in here last year for the Rochdale game, the 6-1 with all the VAR debut and all the nonsense. Yeah, yeah. And I remember I was on the pod after that and I just blew up on VAR, saying how much I hated it, how much it ruins the game, all this, which a lot of my opinions on that still exist, but to have VAR then come back around and be the biggest savior of my life, I was like, you know what?
VAR,
yeah, I was like,
my Lord, VAR.
It was one of those, that's just one of those moments that, again, win or lose, like, we'll never, ever forget that. That was something we'll always have.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And I think we need to make a transition. This is a tough transition to make this time of year because all we really care about is this game that's happening on Saturday. But silly season is upon us, and the rumors are starting to fly, and most teams don't have one more game to worry about. So they're actually investing the time and energy, so we have to as well. So we've seen a lot of big rumors flying around about Spurs in general, and I think we'll probably have to start this conversation by just getting the big one off the table that that everybody wants to talk about. And we did get a question from Suge on that. So Kevin, you have Suge's question queued?
Yeah. So he says, well, he assumed that we were going to talk about this after the final, but we're talking about it now. So he's going to go ahead and ask. Thoughts on the whole Bale thing? No. Would you want him back or no?
No.
Rick says no. Do you have anything to elaborate on the no or just no?
Too expensive. It just won't be worth it.
Aren't the rumors that they'd be willing to pay most of his contract?
They're
going to
pay most of the contract or something.
But he's on 600K a week. Yeah, so like, even if they're paying like even if they're paying two thirds of it, we're still shelling out 200 grand a week, and I can't see it.
The whole thing with Bale is it's one of those where it's almost not even worth discussing because it's such a pipe dream. We would all love to have him back, but no, you're not going to bring somebody. Oh, as a squad guy, you wouldn't like to have Gareth Bale off the bench?
No.
You're out
of
your mind.
Come on, Rick. Bale's one of the best fucking players in the world.
The guy came off the bench and won the Champions League final last year, exactly. Single-handedly.
If he was so good and if he was so great, why isn't everybody after him?
Because not a lot of people can pay 600K a week.
Yeah. In the injuries, yeah.
I think the big thing for me is I would love to have him back, but there's no, like, he's not going to last the whole Premier League season, I don't think. So he would have to be willing to come and be like a guy who starts some games, but also he's going to have to come off the bench. But imagine Imagine bringing Gareth Bale off the fucking bench.
Well, and paying him that kind of money to come off the bench.
And that's the thing, too. With the rest of our squad.
Look at every other... All right. Connor asked us earlier about big picture. This is fucking big picture. I'm not saying necessarily that I'm like 100% for this, but like every major team in the world is paying guys that much money to sit on their bench. City's paying guys like $250,000, $300,000 to play.
Sanchez
like...
Sanchez on at United.
Yeah. 500 grand. Doesn't even play. Fucking... Ollie's got more goals at fucking Old Trafford than Sanchez does this year because he scored in the friendly. Like, or as many. I think Sanchez has won there all year. Like, and they're paying him like 500K a week. Like, this is what big teams do. And
Kevin's
I'm not,
absolutely right.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is the move, but like eventually, if we want to consider ourselves a big fucking club, this is what we're going to have to do. Like, we're going to have to pay these guys money to fucking come here.
You're absolutely right with that point. But the big thing that you said, too, was eventually. We're not there yet,
right,
and that's the problem with the whole bail. Like, you're absolutely right. Eventually, the wage structure will go up, and Rick's talked about it, too. That's the beauty of the new stadium is all of the money will come in, and our wage structure will rise. But as of right this moment, there is no way that we would take somebody – like Bale and be like, hey, even if we cut his wages in half and said you're making 300 grand a week, we're not going to pay somebody 300 a week to be a bench guy when Harry Kane, the best striker in Europe, is making half that. Like, well, you're not gonna just obliterate our entire wage structure at this moment. You're so right, though. Eventually, we do need to get to that point because that also attracts other people. Yeah. Nobody's going to want to come to Spurs if they know. And that's also Bale. I mean, like, why City. Would you want to go to Spurs and make 150K a week when I could go to somewhere in China and make 400K a week or something like that? So it will change. I just don't think we're there yet. And the Bale thing is just such a pipe dream that we all would love to have him back because we have those fond memories. But
this seems to have a little bit more legs to it than previous rumors.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not going to happen because I think there is – Levy's a businessman. Imagine the jersey sales with Gareth Bale fucking comes back. That alone, I mean, is almost it doesn't
I'd buy
make
one
up
of each.
For it. Right. Yeah. Like, I'm immediately buying one if
there's
he's back.
There's 200 quid from me.
I just don't I think there are bigger fish to get.
Yeah.
That sounds
there's
crazy.
Bigger problems this offseason
like,
to resolve.
Do we
than Gareth
do we need
Bale.
Another attacker right now? I mean, we're already we're already struggling over being like, oh, we have to bench Lucas Moura, who just scored a fucking hat trick in the semifinal for the final, maybe. My thing is we need fucking central.
We need somebody that we need a new Eriksen.
Central midfield's much.
However the fuck you say his name.
Yeah, central midfield's a far bigger priority. But I just quickly before Rick jumps in, I've got to say Bale is one of the best. I'm very surprised at how he's perceived by a lot of people now as this like kind of. He's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Real Madrid are a complete circus, and you can't hold it too much against Bale that it seems to have gone sour at Real Madrid because that happens a lot of the time.
The fans Bale's, are smashing his cars when he scores
my
a goal.
God, how ungrateful. The guy scored, what, 3 Champions League goals, right?
Yeah.
In finals, I mean.
Yeah.
2 last year and 1 against Atletico when he scored the winner.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's one of the best players in the world and has been for 5, 6 years or whatever, 7 years. I think he'd be a fantastic signing. I just don't see it for the reason Rick said, which is the wages, which in the cold reality, like you guys are saying, Lucas, Kevin, saying in the future, maybe that might cease to be a consideration, but it is now, so I can't see it happening.
We have 2 centre-backs that are over 30. We have 2 full-backs that need replacing. We have a lack of central midfielders. And you're talking about paying a 30-year-old 200 grand when we're paying 2/3 of his wages. It's not going to happen. We got priorities elsewhere on the pitch that we need to
real
to
fast, let's switch to some
other
rumors.
I think what Rick said too, I think we have those answers already, and that's something that we've done in transfer windows that was so brilliant by Levy and Poch, where the one, like the last one that we spent on, aside from Lucas Moura, that summer, two summers ago, where all we were thinking about was like, we need like a backup for Eriksen. We need this. We need attack. And we had the best. We had just finished with the best defense in the Premier League. And what did we go out and do? We got a new right back, and we got a new center back. So I think with 2 new, we got Foyth too. So we have Foyth and Sanchez coming up They will be good. I think we have Serge and Kyle Walker-Peters that could be great right backs. I think we have the opportunity. We'll talk about buying Sessegnon probably. That's probably on everyone's wish list. Yeah. But we now can get him very cheap. And I think Poch, with somebody of that talent and that age, and Poch is like the fullback whisperer, I think that Sessegnon, if we were to bring him in, could be the new left back of the future. Yeah, I think that we've actually been smart defensively, buying preemptively, and now we can let these guys grow and become studs instead of having to go buy a $70 million somebody.
Talking positively about Spurs transfer windows feels really odd.
Yeah, it does.
To say we've done anything.
But certainly there's a lot more talk about outgoing players right now in the in Spurs transfer window. Like we're talking about, it looks like Trippier to Napoli is a pretty sure thing almost. It's as close as to a sure thing as we're going to get. So he's gone, so that leaves us with Aurier, who's been hurt a lot, and Walker-Peters, who clearly Poch doesn't have that much faith in anymore, I don't think. There's definitely been some loss of faith.
I think he has a lot of faith.
Well,
I just
when
think
you're playing fourth there instead of Walker-Peters over like several of the last few games of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right, Anthony. I think Walker-Peters got that big chance in Barcelona, and other than the mistake he made for the goal, I thought
he was
well.
Great.
Yeah, he did
was
very really well. And I've always liked the look of him, but I think you're right. I think he should have got more chances. Today, he's been left out of the England under 21 squad for the tournament, which is the equivalent of the Euros, you know, the senior Euro, but it's the under 21 version. That's a massive thing. Yeah. He should be playing in that. I know we've got Wan-Bissaka, who's got the starting spot, and he's brilliant, and I'd love Spurs to sign him, by the way. But Walker-Peters has got to be looking at this situation and thinking, if I was on loan for the last 2 years at Bournemouth, or even in the Championship, even if he was at like Leeds or some decent Championship team, he'd probably be in that squad. So he's got to look at the last 2 years and see where's his career going, because I agree with you, Anthony. I don't think Poch has got the faith in him.
But he also signed a new deal in the summer.
Yeah,
Walker-Peters did, which means he believes in working with Poch, and he believes in this system that he will eventually
change a lot of things.
Yeah,
though.
He can. I mean, but I think that we'll see the rise in Walker-Peters. Again, it's all about regular runouts. And you can judge people on you want in training, but training is different. When you get the regular runouts, look at what Sissoko did. And Rick, don't jump in, but I mean, look at Sissoko getting a regular run out in his position that actually benefits him. Not getting 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there as a winger, which he never was and never was good at. He actually got a regular run out in his own position, and he became arguably the MVP. So I think that if we're forced into, I hope we're not forced, but I would like to see Walker-Peters get some kind of regular run out with that rotational squad, like get, because again,
I think if we sell Trippier though, we're buying somebody.
We have to buy somebody,
but it doesn't need to be a right back. We have two capable ones.
Maybe.
I don't know. Serge, I like Serge, but he just gets so many injuries, mate. He's just not put a consistent run of games together. And I know that's not his fault, but I don't think we can hang our hat on Serge and say, this is the guy who's going to be dependable, just because unfortunately he doesn't seem to be fit for long periods of time.
Well, this is one thing I was actually thinking about. This is one thing that really, really good managers do. They'll have their squad, and they'll have their season, and they'll play their players. And then at some point they'll get rid of players who are injury prone.
Yeah.
No matter who they are, no matter what their name is, no matter how much they're getting paid, they'll eventually get rid of them. Like Ferguson, he got rid of Beckham, because Beckham was always injured. Sold him to Real Madrid because he knew he'd reached a peak, and that was the end of that. And I think that's what Poch needs to do. I think he needs to go through the squad and say, look,
Lamella's out. Lamella's gone.
We keep getting injuries to certain players. I need to just get rid of them.
We were all thinking but Lamella. Right there.
Lamella's one. Serge is one.
Kane.
There has to be.
I was going to say the Winks as well. Yeah. I mean, but Rick, you make a good point, and I don't disagree with you. But you've got to have Kane's injury prone. But obviously, we're not going to get rid of.
No, you're not going to get rid of Kane.
But Winks as well. Where'd you draw the line there, though?
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's what he has to decide.
Well, and you need to replace these guys because
you can't keep going on and on and hoping they will stay fit. Hoping they'll stay fit. Yeah. Lamella is not going to stay fit. He never does.
Yeah.
Same with Serge.
But Serge is young. Serge is only 25.
It doesn't matter. He's been with us, what, is his third year now?
We bought him in January.
This is Serge's second year.
Yeah.
And, but again, there wasn't a lot of injury with Serge. It wasn't as much injury. It was a lot about getting his way in and making mistakes. He made a couple mistakes. This kind of, like, again, the throw-in thing against Crystal Palace that we all remember. Like, that was why he could never find his way out. The injuries just started this year. So I do think there's time there.
Well, that's the thing. You got to work out whether you're going to persist with them. Or you're going to get rid of him.
But I think there's a real player there.
I think Potter's, you know, part of his comments when he's saying we have to be brave and all of this, I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I think he means...
You can't just keep holding on to people.
You can keep holding on to people and keep holding on and hoping. But at some point you've got to go, no.
And that's true too. And I think two points that I want to... One is a question that I want to bring to you guys. But A, with Trippier, I just want to say... I told you so to everyone.
Hey.
I was screaming after the World Cup, sell him now. I never rated him as a fullback. I thought he was a liability defensive, no pace, never in the right position. So I was screaming when we got those summer offers from people. I was like, let's sell him now for $40 million.
I was screaming it.
But everyone was just like, oh my God, but what about his free kick against Croatia? I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that. Sell him now.
I've got to say, my first appearance on this podcast was like 3 years ago, and that was the first thing I said was that Trippier
can
defend. I've got audible evidence to back it up. So.
Absolutely. But the other thing that kind of spooks me a little bit is we can sit here and we can discuss transfers for the next 6 hours. The important thing is next Saturday, those 90 minutes, and if we know it and we're hearing these rumors, so are they.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that like kind of spooks me is, do you even playing Trippier? It's like he knows he's on his way out. So why would you not put in? And that goes back to what we were talking about in the first half with like lineups and stuff like that. Why would you play a guy like Tripp on Saturday who knows that regardless of how well he plays, he's on his way out?
Still,
we are moving past him.
It's probably his last chance. I mean, well, even if he's going to Napoli, he's probably not playing.
Do you want to trust somebody that's going to actually try and compete for a spot, or somebody that's on his way out? And this game means nothing to Tripp because he will not be part of Tottenham Hotspur next season.
Champions League final. They're all professionals at the end of the day. I see what you're saying, but I don't think a professional at that level is ever not going to give everything in a Champions League.
I agree.
He wants to win the trophy.
Oh, yeah. Totally. But again, he's just. Well, I would rather have somebody that's better.
He can want to defend all he wants.
Better,
Trippier wants to be good at defense, but he's not. So I would rather have somebody that is and has that little bit of a chip on his shoulder to try and earn himself a spot.
I think there's a point there, and I think the point that I'd like to make is I think knowing that you're in the Champions League final, yes, I understand you have to get in the market now for buying players. Like you have to start reaching out for who you're going to acquire. And you probably need to at least have some feelers on the guys that you know are outgoing. But I think you need to remain way more quiet on those outgoing players until after Saturday.
That was basically what I was trying to say.
Despite the fact that I think Trippier should never play, like this conversation shouldn't be this far along with Napoli with an outgoing player at this point. I think, yeah, talk about the Malcolms of the world that we might be interested in, the Dembele's, the Sessegnon's. Like, talk about the incoming players and work on that like crazy right now. But why are we talking about the outgoing players,
Anthony,
right?
Anthony, that was all I was trying to say. You basically summed it up. Was just that was the whole thing that I'm kind of spooked about is like that distraction for guys that they might be on their way out. We know Llorente won't be here next year, but he might need to be a massive impact.
He's going to Barcelona, apparently.
Yeah, he might need to be, flip of the century. But we might need him to be a massive impact next Saturday, and that's the only thing I'm spooked about is this transfer talk and all these guys being like, pegged for going somewhere else. I need them to be focused on Saturday before you do whatever you want with your future.
I mean, I think that's just something that is in today's game. You can't hide anything because somebody on one side or the other is looking to, you know, move themselves up or whatever, so they're going to leak some information. And
it's always the agent.
Right. I mean, somebody's leaking something somewhere. And I think we all, you know, assume that Trippier's definitely in the conversation to be sold. So I don't think the players are probably paying any attention to it. I do want to say, I think if he goes to Napoli, he's going to be amazing there because they just don't have the physicality.
Yeah.
His positioning's not going to matter quite as much.
I agree.
He's going to whip balls into the box and some Italian guy.
It's a lot more technical game, a lot slower.
It fits him so much better. It does, and I can't imagine him in any world being like, this is a terrible move. He has to be like, all right, let's fucking go. Like,
He'll get paid suit that too. League well.
Yeah, he's going to make money.
He's 30, isn't he?
No,
he's almost 30. He's like 28 or 29. Yeah. Like, he doesn't have many. This is his last big signing to make a contract and a life for himself.
Kevin's right. I think it would be a good move for everyone involved. Yeah. I think Napoli would get a good player. Trippier would be happier and playing better football, and we'd be better off with a better right back.
Yeah, I just wish we were getting 40 million instead of 25 or whatever it is that we're getting.
One more quick point on this, and then let's talk about some of the incoming players we might be interested in.
That was what I was kind of hoping to transition into. Is I was going to ask you guys, like, what are some of the incoming players that you guys would like to have and in what spots?
The Ndombele.
Yeah. He's my number one.
Number one,
Ndombele,
by far. Yeah. He's 22.
22, yeah.
And Poch has said in, like, just, like, off comments about him, like he is Dembele, but I'll be able to be the guy who, like, molds him, and I can't imagine a better fit for that.
Well, imagine Dembele if Dembele was under Poch.
Right, that's
22.
What I'm saying. Like, yeah, I mean,
I can't even think of what that would be.
And he fixes our biggest fucking problem.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing for me, is it's not only that he's 22, it's not only that Poch can make him amazing, but, like, he is the perfect fit for the hole that we have.
Yeah.
And I want him more than anybody else out there.
I agree.
He's number one target for sure for me. And then,
who are we going to be fighting for to get him?
Oh, I think this is the problem with that. Just to jump in there, because I'm totally with Kevin on this. So he's the one. He'd be my number one pick, 100%. But I suspect everyone is going to be in for him.
We're
supposedly
in the lead.
Look, would improve any team.
Yeah, same with Willian.
He's a defensive. He's a defensive midfielder, but actually there's a lot more to his game. He's a bit of a cross, like you mentioned Dembele, and there are a lot of similarities, but he's like, to me, a cross between Sissoko and Dembele.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the energy of Sissoko, but the sort of silkiness of Dembele, which is an unbelievable combination. But to that point, there's a lot of big clubs who are going to be in for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he even likes Real Madrid and your very, very big super clubs are sniffing around him. So I think that's the big problem.
That's the risk, like those big super clubs.
We need to act quickly to get in there before anyone else.
And that's something that, like, what I was waiting to speak, and Joe just hit it right on the head with that last sentence there, act quickly, is that's the one problem with Levy is, yes, he has, and again, we don't know the ins and outs of, like, these dealings and how this all stuff goes down, but with us, it's been Levy has shown that he is, like, very stingy, trying to get every last penny here and there. With this summer, my hope is that we will act quickly and throw the extra $10 million if it needs to be. If you know this guy is going to make your team better and that's who you want, overbuy. That's okay. Like, make the move. Like, a perfect example would be Grealish. Everyone's like, oh, well, we really wanted Jack Grealish. We had an opportunity to get him. Whether or not you rate him, Rick, like, I don't know enough about him.
The funny thing about Rick shaking his head is, like, he checks every box for a Rick transfer.
But again,
that you could ever find.
He's English.
Yes, if you rate Grealish, you don't rate him, that's regardless. But we had an opportunity to get him at a low price, and we didn't take it.
And now he's
Levy tried to penny and nickel and dime. Everyone thought he was coming. Levy tried to get every last dollar out of it, and instead it fell through, and now they're back up in the Premier League, and we will never have him. Now, whether that's good or bad for us, we'll never know. Maybe he's great, maybe he's not. But my point is, if that was somebody that you wanted and you rate him, then you go get him, and you don't try and nickel and dime everyone. Yeah, you make your move, and you go get him. And that's what I'm hoping we do, because not a lot of people. We weren't competing with Bayern Munich to get Grealish. We're going to be competing with the big dogs of Europe to get Ndombele.
Yeah.
So if we want him, you have to be aggressive, and you have to make the move. Otherwise, he's not coming here.
Yeah,
just to play devil's advocate a little bit, and I don't normally take Levy's side, but he also penny-pinched the striker from West Brom.
Oh yeah, the one who's Berahino.
He just got released. Like he's literally
wasn't
unemployed.
He like arrested? He was like arrested
guys,
or
something. The guys
too.
Had a total disaster
and
of a.
And I mean
yeah.
that's
true.
That
true.
Is an example of Levy actually penny pinching and it working out in our favor, most likely. I mean,
but I think he's
obviously
you're absolutely right.
There's no telling if he came to us, yeah. if it would have worked out or not. But like,
no, totally
doesn't look like it. Probably. No. Would.
And I think the fans wanted it. I think the fans wanted Berahino more than anyone else. But
I remember we were livid when we didn't.
But it's with him, I'm just saying if you've isolated this guy as a target that you want yeah. and you really want him and he will make
money.
Us better, then you need to be aggressive and make the money and or pay the money and make that quick move.
Yeah, and that yeah. goes back to
you can't try to get in a bidding war with Bayern Munich because
no.
what they're yeah. going to take that.
No, you're
and
right.
I think it goes back to you talking about the Champions League final and us learning that we need to change
learning lessons.
Yep.
I honestly, and I don't know how I can believe this after our last two transfer windows, but I think we're going to splash some cash.
We have to.
Absolutely.
We have to.
And I think it's going to be like, all right, we want this guy. All right, what do you want for him? All right, we're paying that.
And yeah. we have the money now, especially
do you think
by going
Malcolm's
this far.
Realistic? Is it Malcolm?
I don't want Malcolm. I think he's a trouble. I think he's a talented player, but we've already got good at, like, Lucas.
Hasn't he been on our radar for, like, 2 years
well,
now?
Two or three seasons.
Luke,
right? Yeah, off seasons.
Kevin made the point a little earlier. Lucas can't get in our team usually when we've got a full strength. And he's a very good player to have around. He's got a good attitude. He's been doing a great job for us. He plays the same role as Malcolm. Malcolm's a hothead. He's unpredictable. I think it'd be an unnecessary gamble. I don't like Malcolm. But just very quickly. So bringing this back just briefly to the Champions League final, because following on what Kevin said there, this is another thing about being in the Champions League final. It can be a springboard to hire, like, a more glamorous shop window, so to speak, right? Because Liverpool signed Alisson on the back of the fact they got to the Champions League final. They finished below us in the league. They came fourth, right, last season. Mm-hmm. But they got in the Champions League final. That made them more marketable. This is what we need to leverage in this transfer window, is that glamour or that sort of, you know, that as a big pulling point, essentially, yeah. for incoming transfers and really be like, look, we're this kind of club that gets in Champions League finals. You want to come play for us?
Imagine if we
Let's
spent
go
money.
For it. Yeah, you know.
Well, and we
that.
Have to your point, though, Joe, we have to be convincing that we are going to be that team.
Yeah.
We can't just sell off Eriksen, sell off Trippier, sell off all these guys that contributed us to us getting there. And I don't want to call Trippier a contributor, but I guess he's a contributor.
No, you're right. You're
but,
right.
But like if we sell off all these guys and it doesn't look like we're buying to replace right away, we're not going to draw those guys in. So this is a really – like we're going to have to be creative and we're going to have to time everything perfectly. We can't wait till the end of the window to buy these guys. We yeah. need to buy early to show that, yes, like Eriksen's leaving, but look what we've got to replace him.
Well, that's kind of our transfer policy usually is buy before you sell, right? Other than like Bale. That's like the main one.
But it's also
Levy
buy
does
at the
not
last
like
possible
yeah,
second.
We buy yeah. yeah.
But Levy
how many
doesn't
transfer
like
windows
to
have
sell?
We waited till like 11 yeah, p.m. and we're all
true.
Bringing
yeah.
it? Like,
like literally watching the last second. Yeah.
Danny Murphy at midnight. That was
yeah. one Well, the latest rumors that I heard were Callum Wilson from Bournemouth.
Actually, both the Bournemouth
Brooks.
Guys. Yeah, which I would love.
I
Brooks.
Brooks, Brooks fits the bill more than. I mean, Wilson's a good player, but he's 27, so you'd.
He's gotta, he'd have to be totally
he's
willing
up, he's
to be
up
a backup.
Harry Kane,
yeah,
exactly
well,
what?
Backup that's going to cost a hefty amount yeah. of money.
Well, I think if we get both, they'd be talking about both for 80 million, which is.
Well, that'd be alright.
Shit,
right.
I'd
that's
pay
not
that.
Bad, yeah.
So, this is a. This
I'd
a,
pay that, like,
this
I have
something that I would. I kind of want to bring this up. I think, again, we could sit here all day and debate the transfers that we know nothing about, but I would rather us actually pay, rather than take a gamble on somebody, like, I wish that we would pay Toby the money.
Yes.
I
pay him the money because,
to.
A, we talk about injuries. Toby is good, clean health.
He's
not
had one injury?
Not touch wood, but
right?
yeah.
Like one?
But we know what he is, and yeah, he's 30. He hasn't shown a single slow step or anything like he's aging. We know what he's capable of. That's a proven commodity. I would rather us pay him.
I
want to
challenge that a little bit. Like last season, he had some significant injuries. Like every
yeah,
year
last,
he has
last
some.
Season he was out a while. But I think yeah. generally Lucas is right.
But it's a proven. We know that he knows how. And that's one thing that I always question with what I always bring it up when we talk transfers is what do we know about Ndombele? That he can play well in the league that he's in? Like, when you know that you're a proven Premier League commodity, that's different, because this is the hardest league to play in. It's the most physical. It is really, really, really difficult to be good at. We all saw Vincent Janssen go bang in like 100 goals in the fucking Netherlands.
To be fair, you're right, but Ndombele was dominating City in the Etihad.
That was just a broad
example. You're right.
The Premier League can actually defend his ass off. Everyone's like, oh, look at Fazio. Like, what a defender he is. And then he comes to the Premier League and he just gets smoked. It's like, we know that Toby can do this. He's a dynamite Premier League defender.
But you don't know. Maybe we have offered him the money, mate. We don't know what happens behind the scenes. I don't think... I take your point, but I think we've exhausted it with Toby. I think he's probably been offered the last offer, unfortunately. And I just think that, look, Levy's a guy who looks at that fact that he's 30 years old.
He sees...
You know, he's weighed it up, and we don't know what it's like behind the scenes, but in terms of his effort on the pitch, you can't knock it. He's played like, you know, his life depended on it.
You've already made steps to replace him. I don't think those guys are there yet, unfortunately. Like, I don't think Sanchez and Foyth can really replace him at this point, but they're...
Long-term, Sanchez will be a terrific
defender. I think Sanchez and Jan next year would be... I'd be fine with that. If you told me right now, that was
Sanchez has only looked poor when he's been in the back three this season.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but Sanchez has always looked really, really strong when he's been part of the back four. But with a back, when we go three at the back, Sanchez somehow this year has looked really, really poor. Maybe it's a sophomore slump. We don't know. But I have a lot of faith that he will be a great, great center back for us moving forward.
His playing time has gone down some lately, and like we've seen Foyce step up.
Toby's got back in the fold, hasn't he?
And playing well, so... I think he knows, though, that he... I mean, what is he, 23, 24 years old? I mean, he's still very...
Sanchez, 22.
22?
Yeah. 22. Yeah, he's one of the best young defenders in the world, like, at that age.
I mean, he's... I have a lot of faith in him.
He's still very raw to me, though, and, like, I worry, like, if Toby leaves and it's Jan and Sanchez, like, there's going to be a lot of mistakes.
But if Jan's 32,
we were going to give up a lot of goals.
I think, to Lucas's point earlier, a run of games. The more games he gets, the better he looks to me.
Yeah. Hard to come in and plug in a day when...
Yeah. Just coming in for one game.
You haven't played in a month, and all of a sudden you're getting thrown out there.
But if you're playing with Jan every week, then, you know...
Well, I think the one thing we all agree is there needs to be some squad changes.
Yeah.
We can't keep doing what we're doing or not doing over the last 18 months. There has to be some changes. There has to be some outgoings. There has to be some players coming in. And we have to trust Pochettino to do the right thing. You know, we really do. You know, we can have all the opinions in the world. Like Grealish, I think, is wrong. you'll remember this. Grealish reminds me of David Bentley.
There's an element of the flashy kind of young player.
David Bentley was the new Beckham.
Yeah,
but he had that goal against Arsenal in 2008, which was the greatest goal ever.
But it's the same thing. You know?
I see that. That similarity.
You know, I think you'll just, it just won't work.
And what you said, trust Pochettino. I think the big thing is we will spend. We have the money. Making Champions League final this year, we made, like, I think it was like 60 million more than we did last year for just making it this far.
It's like 110 or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
and we can entice players. Players are going to want to come here. The thing is, we have something that's more difficult than other players because we cannot buy mercenaries. We have this thing where, like, us going out and getting somebody like a Pogba or something is horrific for us.
Yeah.
Poch has this thing where he has this team-focused mentality, and we don't have the luxury of just being like, hey, we'll spend $100 million to go buy so-and-so. We have to make sure that they can play on the field and that they have the character traits that we need in our dressing room.
Yeah.
And not a lot of teams worry about that, and that's where we're kind of at a disadvantage. So that's why we do need to trust Poch, because if he doesn't want somebody, like if Poch were to say, you know what, I don't really want to get Zaha, we could all sit here and say, oh my God, Zaha would make us so much better. But again, this is just an example. But what if he's a bad locker room, like if he's a cancer in the locker room or something like that?
But we're going to need to be brave and take those risks and do it early, this transfer window, if we're going to be successful.
Absolutely.
Because if we wait too long... whatever clout we've gotten from getting this deep into the Champions League, we're going to lose as people start to get knocked off the table and picked up by other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's the thing that we have to focus on this.
But that's where we're at that disadvantage, is that we need to make sure that they come in and they fit and they mold with this unit, because if you could be the best player in the world, but if you don't fit with us and you cause problems, then it's not worth it.
Yeah, I think we need, like Rick said, I totally agree. We need to make some moves both for our starting lineup and our bench. Erickson's kind of the big question mark, I think. If he leaves and we get that money for him, I think we have to spend like every penny of it.
Plus, oh yeah. Yeah. We can't sit on that money.
I would love for him to stay, but I think his head is,
I think he's gone.
He wants to make some fucking money. Yeah, and I can't blame him for that, because as much as I want to say like, oh yeah, I would fucking just play for the same team my whole life, but I've never been in a situation where I've been offered $300,000,
$400,000 a week. I think Barca or Real will come in for Eriksen, and I think he is going to go, and I think Toby's going to go. And you're right, that's the big...
That's $125 million probably.
The thing with Eriksen is he's so different to our other attacking players. You know, you've got like... And you can talk about Bale or Malcolm or Zaha or whoever, but there's very few Eriksen style players. You're looking at maybe De Bruyne,
right.
Ozil when he was good about 6 years ago, before he's shit like he is now. You know, those players are very rare. So you could argue someone like Sigurdsson, but it's a step down from Eriksen. Right. He's a similar operator.
That's why
but
we got rid
down.
Of him.
That's why we got rid of him, exactly. So I think with Eriksen, we have to be thinking we're not going to replace him directly with a similar type player. So maybe it is a guy like Zaha, who is very dissimilar to Eriksen, but could be a really big asset. Not him specifically, but someone of that ilk, you know.
Well, let's wrap up our last thoughts on this. And I think this Eriksen conversation is a good way to wrap up a transfer talk.
Absolutely. And that's something like with what Joe was saying. With Eriksen, my only thing would be, if you're going to sell him, have a replacement in mind. But don't panic buy. That's the thing, is when we sold Bale, we had all that money, and we spent it all that summer, and what, two of them are still here?
The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, the only ones still here are Eriksen and Lamella.
But list those players.
Kirikez,
Soldado,
Paulinho.
Fazio, was it?
No, Fazio no, was later. Paulinho was one of them.
Paulinho.
Kapuwe.
Are
we missing one?
Sigurdsson?
No, Sigurdsson was already there. Sigurdsson had a season with Bale before it.
But that's my whole point, is don't just get the money and have it burning a hole in your pocket and panic. If you have somebody in mind, make the offer and go get him. But like Joe was saying, it's going to be tough losing Eriksen, who is the metronome that makes everything tick offensively for us. But we can, don't panic buy and just spend all that money immediately because you have it. Actually have somebody that you want in mind if you're going to let him go.
Well, and if we're selling, a lot of us said we're probably selling Lamella, or we should consider selling Lamella.
I think Lamella is probably gone, unfortunately, as much as I love him.
But the two of them together, like, not that they're that similar of players, but like it's taking two midfielders that can kind of contribute to getting the ball through the midfield.
And it's something, too, that it's okay that we sell. Everyone thinks... What was it when Liverpool sent what's his name to Barcelona?
Coutinho
was like the main player for Liverpool.
I'd buy Coutinho,
and
right now.
Everyone was like, "Oh my God, what are you doing?" But they spent that money to booster themselves in other areas that they needed boostering. And
Van Dijk,
all of a sudden, they go to back-to-back Champions League finals. So we need to be smart if we're going to say it's okay that we let Eriksen go. We need to have a really, really, really strong plan as to how we're going to spend that money and make ourselves better. We can't just sell him for the sake of selling it and then sit on that and be like, oh, well, this is good enough. Yeah. We need to actually have a good plan and use that money to make ourselves better in other areas, if that's our plan.
That's the thing that Poch has to prove to me.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's good at that.
No.
Yeah. He's not good at replacing. Purchasing.
This is going to be a key offseason, and we'll probably be able to focus a lot more on this offseason after we get past this final. But I think we've gotten a good taste of what's in store for us this offseason.
Busy summer,
and it's going to hopefully be a busy and huge summer, and a great conversation. I'm glad we had this second half. It really brought me someplace that got me my mind off of the game, the big game, for a couple minutes. But that's what's really coming up.
What game?
We will be back next Monday after this, after the Champions League final, to hopefully talk about how fantastic it was and just be ecstatic and celebrate some more. We'll also do a season wrap up for the season, which we've been holding off on. Talk about some of our prediction scores and how terrible I did in my predictions, but some of you guys did better than me. but anyway, but I think that about wraps it up. So thanks to Rick for editing and sound, Charlie for the music, Kevin for social media, Tommy for history, Victoria for the logo, and as always, the Atlantic Bar and Grill for the use of recording space. Hit the subscribe button and write us a review on iTunes if you like our pod, or check us out wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review. Check us out on Twitter and Facebook at 4 Star Spurs, and our website at 4starspurs.com. Come on, you Spurs.